Hello, and welcome. Excuse me. Let's try that again. Hello, and wouldn't that be funny if I, like, I mean, it wouldn't be funny because choking is my biggest fear, but wouldn't that be crazy if I, like, choked and died, like, on the show? I don't know. I guess, like, somebody would have to, like, the Melissa Broder Archival Society, which would, like, consist of, like, my sister and my husband, would, like, you know, they'd be, like, going through the archives, and, like, in 40 years, they'd be, like, lost, found, lost episode of Eating Alone in My Car show, unfinished, found on the phone, and then it would be in the Melissa Broder Archival Library, which just consists of, like, my cell phone and a couple of books. But hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dying Alone in My Car show, the Choking on Vegetable Soup Alone in My Car show with your host. So sad today. Today I'm dying of vegetable soup. I am dying in the Whole Foods parking lot. And not just any Whole Foods parking lot, the Beverly Hills Whole Foods parking lot. When I just had that moment of choking, I was like, well, this is where it all ends. Beverly Hills Whole Foods parking lot. Not a terrible place to die. I mean, I'd prefer not to die in public. I think I'd prefer not to die in public. But, you know, at least this parking lot is, it's, you know, usually I don't like, it's more of a garage. It's got, like, a roof. And usually I don't like a parking garage. I'm much more, I like open air. I've said it before. I like ingress and egress. I prefer street parking with a meter to a parking lot. And I prefer an open air lot to a garage. I never don't lose my car in a garage. I have to text myself, you know, like section 320G. But this is a pretty small lot, so it would take a lot for me to lose my car. But nonetheless, here I am having some vegetable soup, choking on some vegetable soup in the Beverly Hills Whole Foods parking lot. You would think that the Beverly Hills Hofu is luxe. It's actually pretty small. Maybe it just feels small because the whole place is, all the space is filled up with lip injections, you know, so it just makes it feel smaller because you have to make room for the lip injections. But, nonetheless, I'm here. We're here. We're queer. Get used to it. I am queer. I think I can still consider myself queer. You know, as much as I, well, I was going to start talking about cock and pussy, but let's, it's a little early for that. It's only 11 a.m. And I'm having this vegetable soup. Why am I having vegetable soup? I was actually just thinking, wait for a moment. I was thinking, like, is it once queer, always queer? I think so. You know, I think if you're sexually fluid, you're sexually fluid. Or at least for myself, you know, I do still consider myself queer. Let it be known in the Melissa Broder Archival Library, that I still consider myself queer. I always called myself bisexual. Recently, the past year or so, I've really been thinking that pansexual really covers my sexuality more. But I kind of feel like I'm too fucking old to start changing it, to start changing my shit, you know, like I'm too, and also, like, I don't know, I just feel like I'm too fucking old to say pan. Like, you have to be, like, younger than Miley Cyrus to say pan, I think. But I think if I were to consider myself anything, it's definitely, it would be pansexual, omnisexual. I guess, I'm open, you know, I'm open, even though I'm in a closed relationship at the moment. I'm open, you know, my heart is open. My pussy is open. So I digress. Let's see. Why am I having soup? Well, I received a request via email that I do a soup episode. And never let it be said that I'm not a woman of the people. You know, never let it be said that I'm not a good listener. I'm a listener. I listen. And thus, I was like, what the hell? Let's do a soup episode. Let's die in the Whole Foods parking lot. So that is what I'm doing. And it's great. I like a vegetable soup. I like a Whole Foods vegetable soup because it's very low cal. It's almost like eating air. But you get to, you know, my favorite, one of my favorite types of foods is like when you're basically like eating nothing, but you feel like you're eating something. I had a big phase in my life with shirataki noodles, which is like, I don't know, they have like 20 calories or something for a bag of them. And they kind of smell like a wet sweat sock, which, you know, has never really been a deterrent for me, but might be a deterrent for you. But you got to really drain them, and then you towel dry them. You give them a nice warm, you give them a nice caring tender towel dry with like a paper towel. I eat most of my foods off paper towels anyway, but with the shirataki, you give them like a towel dry, and then I would make them, I'd make like a faux kugel with like peaches. I'd cut up some peaches and cottage cheese and Splenda and cinnamon and bake that shit in the oven. It's really good. I mean, I think any other human being would think it was disgusting, but I really liked it. Or I'd put it with like a marinara sauce and some vegetarian meatballs. I rocked that. But that was years ago. I might get back in the shirataki game. It's been a while. I hit that shit pretty hard for about 2 years. And then it sort of went by the wayside. But, you know, I love foods like that, where it's like you're eating nothing yet, something for nothing. And I feel that way about the Whole Foods vegetable soup. So, you know, I'm taking a request. I'm doing that number, the vegetable soup. The other reason why I'm having vegetable soup is I received another email. Someone wrote and asked, well, they said they were asking me what I think is the saddest food. What is the saddest food? And to them, they think that lentil soup is the saddest food. And I told them I'd think about it. You know, what to me is the saddest food. You know, I think that soup is, I don't know if it's 100% inherently a sad food. I think that to me, one time I saw there was an old man eating soup alone at a diner. And I felt like my heart was just going to fall out onto the linoleum floor. You know, that was definitely like, that was some sad shit. And there probably are foods that are like unequivocally, inherently across the board sad. But you know what? I'm not a fundamentalist. I don't want it to be said that I'm a sadness fundamentalist. I mean, some things are fundamentally what they are. You know, like when it comes to gothness, I feel Taco Bell, inherently goth. Wendy's, inherently not goth. And you know, I think Wendy's is a place that's fairly sad. As much as I've experienced great joy in my lifetime at the Wendy's Super Bar, I do think Wendy's overall has a sadness to it. But I'm not a sadness fundamentalist, and I feel that so much of life is our perspective and what we bring to it. So in thinking about the saddest foods, excuse me, I'm just going to have a spoonful of soup. I'm going to have a spoonful of my soup. In thinking about the saddest foods, I decided to approach the question from a more subjective realm, you know, less of a unequivocal, fundamentalist, universal, across the board realm, and less of like a theoretical realm. And more of a experiential sadness. You know, a cinema verite of sad foods, if you will. And so I thought of about five or six foods that, or food-related media that in my life have brought me great sadness. And to answer the question, I thought I would share these foods with you. I guess these are my top 5 or 6 saddest foods and food related things, or at least the top 5 that I could think of, you know, in doing this show. So, in no particular order, one sad food for me is it was actually more of a moment. It was a sad food moment. It was a human interaction. I was in line at the grocery store, and the checkout person referred to my almond milk as milk. You know those people who pronounce milk milk, and they pronounce pillow pillow? I'm not sure why that happens. I don't know where that pronunciation comes from, but it seems to be a trend. There are a lot of people who pronounce milk milk and pillow pillow. And I don't know where that comes from. I don't know what that the genesis or the origin story is of the milk milk phenomenon. Often I find it annoying or odd, or I feel a sense of sort of disconnect from my fellow human. But on this particular day, when the cashier referred to my almond milk as milk, I felt a great wave of sadness. A great wave of sadness and an intimacy that I felt that I was seeing a side of this human being, an innocence, and a closeness with my fellow man. You know, I felt a connection. And what I also felt was an awareness that I was probably very PMS. I think when someone says the word milk and you feel as though you're going to cry, it's safe to say that you might be having some sort of hormonal surge. I think it is safe to say that. And in that moment, I felt a great sadness, a great connection, and also an awareness that I was probably going to be getting my period within the next 3 days. As a sidebar, I was thinking the other day about what are the most sort of hormonal places I've ever been in my life. And there was a time that my sister and I went to go see Fiona Apple years ago. Fiona Apple, I think, is she's a real fucking artist, you know? Fiona's a real artist to me. PJ Harvey, also a real artist. You know, they don't do a ton of interviews. There's not a ton of banter. They just do their shit. You know, they make their albums on their time. They're really, to me, those two women, they are real artists. But so my sister and I went to a Fiona Apple concert, and neither of us were supposed to get our period anytime soon. Like, I think I had just had mine a week before. I don't think my sister was supposed to be getting hers for another 2 weeks. And we both got our period at the Fiona Apple concert. It was like, talk about tidal. There was something about being at Fiona that just, I mean, it was like the menstruosity of the place just literally generated periods within my sister and I. That's probably one of the most hormonal places I've ever been. But top six saddest foods for me, or food moments. One was definitely cashier milk. Number 6, no particular order, cashier milk moment. Coming in at number 5, I feel like I'm on like MTV TRL or something. Coming in at number 5, in no particular order, is the variety pack. What the fuck is the variety pack? Okay, here we go. When I was a kid and I was at sleepaway camp, my dad, on visiting day, would bring us bags and bags of junk food. I think my mom allowed this because the camp, we would be allowed to have the junk food for 3 days, and then the camp would throw it out. So my mom knew, you know, I wasn't going to become her obese parents within 3 days, I guess. I don't really know. I also don't think she knew how much junk my father was bringing. But it was so beautiful. You know, it was bags, grocery bags filled with all of my favorite things. I remember licorice ropes, you know, those long licorice whips. There were things, something called a BB bat. I don't know. My dad was really into BB bats. It was like a taffy lollipop. Of course, Doritos, combos, anything involving fake cheese, easy cheese. There was iced tea mix, which we used to eat plain. You know, it was quite the odyssey. But one thing that I remember my father also included one year was something called a variety pack, which was a sort of rectangular shaped box of, I'd let's say, about 8 different small bags of chips, sort of like when you get the pack of the mini cereals, and you get the mix, the various mini cereals. This was that, but of different kinds of chips, Fritos, which I don't love a Frito, but Fritos, Doritos, etc. I was always very homesick at camp. It's not that I loved home that much per se. I just, you know, the torture of the mean girls, it made me want out. It made me sort of fetishize home. And also I loved my dad so much. And when they left and I was crying, I was looking through the junk food to sell, so that I could self-soothe, you know, so that I could numb out the feelings. And I came upon this variety pack. And something about the words variety pack brought just a great sadness within me. You know, picturing my dad shopping for the junk food for me. And then coming upon the variety pack and saying, yes, I think Melissa will like this, and purchasing the variety pack. It could make me cry right now. It could make me cry right now. So the variety pack, while not inherently sad, it's actually a party in a box. For me, that particular variety pack and the words variety pack, when juxtaposed with my loneliness, Variety Pack comes in at number 5. Number four has a similar vibe to it. It also is a paternal love food. And it's a piece of media. I remember on Father's Day, when I was very young, maybe 5 or 6, seeing this commercial for Carvel cakes, Carvel ice cream cake. And I remember the jingle. I actually looked it up not too long ago. And it was sort of similar to what I had remembered it. But I remember this jingle, this Carvel cakes jingle, ice cream cakes, made me cry that day. And it went something like, da-na-na, it's Father's Day, and I'm giving you this Carvel cake because you're my favorite guy. Something like that. I don't know. I don't do it justice. You know, singing, it's not a gift that I was blessed with. I don't have a particularly enchanting voice, but that song, I remember weeping. I was really touched. You know, score one for the advertising industry. I did not have the disposable income at that age to go out and purchase a Carvel ice cream cake. Though, had I would have, and probably tried to hide it under my bed for as long as I could until it melted, and eat as much of that Carvel ice cream cake as I could, and then probably read some kind of excerpt from a Judy Blume book or a romance book that I'd stolen from my mother, and masturbated. You know, that would have sort of been the agenda around this ice cream cake. Perhaps sad for some, for me a very beautiful and joyful experience, but the song itself, giving you this Carvel cake because you're my favorite guy, You know, that and the melody, which I did not do justice. I remember it really brought a tear. So, you know, I award that the Clio, or my personal Clio, or whatever that the advertising award is. I think it's the Clio. I dated someone briefly who was in advertising when I lived in San Francisco at the height of my drinking. This is actually probably, some would consider this a sad food moment. I didn't feel it was sad. I know he thought it was sad. We were dating, and I was mostly drunk. And he was moving. He was moving away to go work in advertising somewhere else. And on the last night that he was moving away, he was having a going away party. And I was supposed to go, but I had stopped and had about 4 or 5. There was a bar I liked that had these martinis. I really drank anything. I was kind of a garbage head. You know, but I would go through phases, and there was this place that had these really, really cheap martinis, you know, made with, I don't even know what kind of vodka, very, like a generic vodka probably, you know, it was like $2 martinis or something. What I liked about it was that it was straight vodka, and also they put these olives in them that had this blue cheese in the olives. It was fucking good. But so I had about 4 or 5 of those, you know, sitting at the bar by myself before I was going to go to this going away party. And I had had them on an empty stomach, and I was ravenous. And I found myself somehow at this Indian restaurant ordering all this takeout and bringing it home and just surrounded by all this Indian takeout and binge eating the Indian takeout. And then, this is going to get dark. I had never been able to be bulimic. I was never able to, like, trigger warning. Eating disorder stuff. I had tried to make myself puke, but I was not, I was never able to do it. And there were a few years where I took laxatives. I was really into the laxatives game. But I remember I went to the pharmacy and I bought that Ipecac syrup after having binged on all of the Indian food. And I remember I was, well, I don't remember that well, but I believe I was in some kind of state between blackout and Ipecac, and I was not able to go to his going away party. And I remember he was texting me all night, "Where are you?" And I remember on my Nokia flip phone, and I think I was so embarrassed. I don't think I texted back. I don't know. I just didn't show up. I just didn't go on this last night. And he really hated me after that. He would call me Cunty McDrinks a lot. He really didn't like me. And I remember I saw him one time in New York when I was living in New York, and he was living in New York after I'd gotten sober. And he looked at me and he said, "Wow, your eyes, something about your eyes looks so different." You know, and I told him I was sober, and he didn't give a shit. You know, he really didn't like me. I remember the first night that we had ever gone out, we went to some kind of concert and I was drunk and I decided that I wasn't sure that this was going to work. And so I just left. I just walked out without saying goodbye. I would think that would be maybe like should have been his first sign that I was probably not someone you wanted to get in a relationship with. But the next day when he called me to find out what had happened or texted me, I told him that I had gone to the bathroom and accidentally gotten locked out of the venue. And then somehow ended up dating this person. I don't know, you know, just sort of fell in. So, you know, I was not good at saying no. I was, and let's not put it in such a passive sense. You know, I was a nightmare. I was not someone you would want to get into a relationship with. I was not capable. But so I would say that's pretty sad. It was definitely sad for him. And I think looking objectively at myself, you know, drunk on an empty stomach on martinis, binging Indian food, and then taking this puke syrup, which, by the way, I didn't even end up puking. You know, I'd say that's a sad food moment, but I didn't feel it was sad at the time. You know, that's one thing that's sad about some of our lower points is that we don't always know that they're sad. But I'd say that was a sad moment. So I digress. That was an unplanned moment. That wasn't even, gonna be part of the thing. Another sad food moment, I would say, is which I didn't feel was sad at the time, but looking back, there's a beauty to it, and there's a sadness. Is when I was young, I used to go to this deli called Jaime's with my grandparents. Jaime's was outside of Philadelphia. Shout out Jaime's, still exists. Good deli. And I would get the hot cabbage borscht. It was a cabbage soup. Sadness soup. It's a cabbage borscht is a Jewish cabbage soup with beef in it. And I think what feels sad to me about that is that the word borscht, there's a sadness to the word borscht. And also in later years, I would try to find it on menus, but a borscht was always, it was a cold cabbage soup. It's very hard to find a hot cabbage borscht with the beef. But I loved that shit, man. It was kind of like if you like stuffed cabbage, it was like a stuffed cabbage type soup. You know, it had that sweet vibe to it. It was really, really delicious. And I feel that it's part of maybe a lost generation. You know, it's harder to find now. It was something that to me was so normal and such a part of my life as a kid because of my grandparents. But I feel that it is harder to find now. A lot of the great Jewish delis have closed. Ratner's, which was a wonderful dairy restaurant in New York. My grandparents would take me to New York every year. My mom took me there quite frequently, but we didn't do a whole lot of eating. But with my grandparents, we would do like the Jewish food tour of New York. And the Second Avenue Deli, it hasn't closed, but it's since relocated. Ratner's has closed. You know, there's a lot of... Katz's is still open. I like Katz's. Carnegie was never the one. It was really Second Avenue Deli and Ratner's. But Second Avenue Deli had delicious cabbage borscht. But really Jaime's in Philly, which... thankfully, it's still open, and maybe, you know, maybe I will go to Jaime's next time I'm home and hit that cabbage borscht. But I think the fact that I just, cabbage borscht was such like a part of my life, you know, that something about thinking that that was like a part of the world, that cabbage borscht was like a very frequent thing in the world, and then getting older and not wanting to say the word borscht, you know, really wanting to, not wanting to be who I was in the borschtness, you know, not wanting to like embrace that part of myself, finding borscht to be a bit of an embarrassing word, you know, my Russian Jewish heritage, just sort of neglecting that. I also remember when we would go to Ratner's, they'd have these amazing onion rolls with butter. Ratner's was a dairy restaurant, so I doubt they had cabbage borscht, hot cabbage borscht, because that has the meat in it, and they didn't have meat, you know, because it was a dairy restaurant, kosher, but they would have these onion rolls with butter, and I would always really look forward to these amazing challah onion rolls with butter. And then I remember when I was really in the throes of my eating disorder one year, refusing to eat the onion rolls. And I think there was looking back, there was a sadness to that too. You know, so there's sort of the Jewish foods of my youth and my grandparents who are no longer with us. You know, that... there's a sadness inherent in all of that, in the cabbage borscht, the hot cabbage borscht, hashtag borscht. So coming in at number two is another more of a moment, a piece of food media. I have no idea what age I was when I saw this TV movie, whether it was an after-school special or I don't know. But I have a very strong memory of this moment. It's again a father-daughter thing. Interesting that I can feel so saddened by the beauty of a father giving their child food. To me, you know, because my father was nurturing and that was really the only way that I could get that nurturing. Maybe that's why I found it so touching. I think I couldn't even begin to think about what it would be like to be fed and cared for in that way by a mother figure. Sometimes when I think about that now, I feel sad. And just like, it's weird to me, you know, it's weird to me, the idea of being nurtured and fed like that by a mother is, you know, it's, I do remember feeling envious of that. But in this TV movie, there was a kid in the hospital who had either, I think, HIV or maybe cancer, and he was undergoing some sort of chemotherapy where he didn't want to eat. And his father, from whom he was estranged, brought him these mints that they had, that my sister actually really liked. She used to get them at this place called, when we'd go with my dad, called the Reading Terminal Market. They were like these chalky white mints, and there were purple ones, and it looked to me when I was watching this TV movie like these were those mints. And the father comes to the hospital to see his dying kid, and he says, "I brought your favorite candies it was the way he said candy. It fucking destroyed me. And also that it was the mints, you know, that my dad used to buy for my sister. Candies. That was just, it really wrecked me. I mean, I would say that I was hormonal then too, except for, I was probably like 9 when I saw that TV movie. But the candies have always stayed with me. And you know, and the fact that the kid wasn't going to eat the candies, you know, it's like he was so sick that even his favorite food was not something that he could be eating. So that's number 2. And number 1, a much more uplifting yet sad food. So the Subway chopped salad, to me, not inherently sad. To me, quite an incredible, fabulous piece of machinery, the Subway salad. Subway chopped salad has brought me great joy. It's like 170 calories the way I do it. I do double turkey, pickle, lots of salt and pepper, olive, green pepper. I do everything except for the spinach. I don't do the spinach. And I sometimes don't get the onion because I'm like, I don't know. I don't dislike onion, but it can be a little much. But everything else, olive, pepperoncini, banana peppers, you know, the whole nine, tomatoes. So, but while for me, you know, the Subway chopped salad is really incredible, there's this place in LA where you can get a really, my favorite chopped salad in Los Angeles is at this old school place called La Scala. And it's very just, it's kind of like being in like the inside of like your grandmother's underwear drawer. Like it's always just me and like a bunch of Alta Cacas. Me and my friend Ryan O'Connell, shout out Ryan O'Connell, and a bunch of Alta Cacas. But I feel like I've been able to replicate the La Scala chopped salad at Subway, which Ryan thinks is like disgusting and horrible. Like he's shocked and chagrined. But I think that, I don't know. So the chopped salad for me, once I discovered that the chopped salad existed at Subway, it was a great day for me. But it's really not a great day for the sandwich artists. You know, I think very few people go in and request a chopped salad. And I think that making the salad is like more of an arduous pain in the ass than making a sandwich. So whenever I ask for the salad, I know it's a sad day for the sandwich artists. You know, I know they're just like, this fucking bitch. Like, who the fuck's getting a salad at Subway? You know, because it's a little more work. But so my number one sad moment was sad, beautiful. You know, sadness and beauty, often synonymous, often interchangeable. Brethren. My number one is, I was at the Subway. I was having a really, a dark, lonely day. I was in a depression. I don't know, this was a year or two ago. And I was at the Subway on Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood, near San Vicente, near Robertson, that area. And, I went in and I ordered a chopped salad. And the sandwich artist, the care and love that this sandwich artist put into this chopped salad, I mean, it was otherworldly. You know, I felt like I was being mothered, I think is what happened. Every ingredient, you know, at Subway often, one disgusting thing about Subway, one of the many, you know, I have a love-hate with Subway. I love it, but I also can sometimes look outside myself and be like, oh yeah, I see the disgustingness. I understand why, you know, everyone is repulsed by the bread smell. And I put bread in quotes, but I love it. But one thing, you know, they always count the slices of the meat and they're always counting like, you know, 2 pieces of cheese, or when you get like the 6-inch sandwich, 5 pieces of turkey. Like, you know, they do that. They're like taught to count it. He was not counting in a way that was for the benefit of the corporation. I don't want to get him in trouble, so I shall not speak his name. It felt like each item, almost as though each item were being blessed as he put them in. And he would ask, like before he put the pickle in, he would say, do you want extra pickle? Do you want more pickle? You know, he was like very, I didn't have to say more lettuce. I like to bulk it up with a lot of the chopped lettuce. I didn't have to say, you know, like extra banana pepper. You know, he would add with each one. And he just really, it seemed to me he probably didn't. My guess is he didn't. However, it felt, the talent and the love that he was transmuting through the creation of that chopped salad, the way that he made me feel cared for, I must have also been hormonal at this time, or maybe it was just the depression and the chemistry in my brain, or maybe, you know, look, it's not always that we're touched by an angel. I teared up. A tear came to my eye, maybe two, maybe three. I was really, and then I, from So Sad Today, I tweeted a shout out to that Subway and to the sandwich artist. And I just said, you know, he had made such a beautiful chopped salad that, you know, I basically just said he's so good at his work. You know, I felt that he needed, I said he is someone who really just takes pride in his work and is just really, I'm sure he has many other talents too. Not that there's anything wrong with just being a sandwich artist, because that's fine too. But I just get the feeling that this is a person who really brings that care into each element of his life. But I just felt, I felt so seen. I felt so held. It was so what I needed in that moment. You know, just that little bit of extra love that it brought me to tears. And you know, that for me was a moment of human connection. It was sad in a, I was touched. I was really moved. And you know, it's inspiring. It's like, okay, well, this is the connection that I should bring to my work. Which, you know, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. So there you have it. Those are my saddest foods. This week, February 5th, Tuesday, February 5th, The Pisces is coming out in paperback. As I've said, if you're not a reader, just grab it on Amazon anyway. Pre-order that shit. Grab it on Amazon. Give it to a friend. If you read a little and you hate it, give it to someone you hate. You can I told you that I used to eat paper in French class. If you want to eat the book, you can do that. Sauces. You could do like, I like to make a Russian dressing. Like you could do like a mayonnaise and ketchup. I haven't done that in a long time, but when I used to binge eat as a kid, that was a big sauce for me was mixing mayonnaise and ketchup. So I could see the Pisces being eaten with sort of a mayonnaise and ketchup. You could eat it with maybe like a hoisin sauce. Maybe a teriyaki dipper, you know, or like a duck sauce type situation. Surprise me, you know. You can send me a picture of the ways in which you cook up my book and what sauce you use. But if you are a reader, if you're someone who reads and you've been thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll give it a try. It's now available in paperback, so it's a lot cheaper now. You don't have to schlep the hardcover. And it's on Amazon. It's called The Pisces by Melissa Broder, and it's a novel. So that's my plug. Wishing you a week of profound food moments. And I will see you on the flip side. Bye-bye.